Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Welcome back to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart and Brian Myers. And
hey, I got a question for you.
We missed you.
Yeah, but your aim is improving, right?
My aim is improving.
Never mind. It's a hunter joke.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'd have to actually go out and hunt more.
Okay. I got a question for you. When did you get back last night with my Jeep?
It was in the afternoon, actually.
Okay. All right. I must have been completely out of it because I didn't notice the thing in my yard until I got home got home this morning from Ames.
Having been in the military, in the Army, that's my Army stealth technique. I sneak it in there. I sneak out, and nobody's the wiser.
Okay. So. All right. I don't know. Normally you're the guy that hasn't had any sleep.
Yeah.
This week I didn't have a lot, so my brain's even operating less function than normal.
I'm used to that, so that's like normal state of affairs for me. So,
I'm
going to have to carry you today?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I think that's a fair assessment. I'm kind of a train wreck, but no, I didn't see that thing until this morning.
Man.
When did he come home? Hey, folks, what's going on here is my Jeep broke down in Cedar Rapids, must have been about a month ago, and unfortunately for Shane, he was the one driving it when it decided to go belly up. So anyway, it got repaired, and Shane and Morgan went over and picked it up yesterday.
Yep.
And got it back home in one piece, and anyway, for some reason, I did not notice that thing. I thought, what, did he come back in the middle of the night? Or did, I don't know.
No.
So much for that.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm going to be outnumbered here at home. I'm already kind of outnumbered anyway. I mean, there's only two guys in our house. Morgan's moving out this weekend, and he found a house to rent with a friend. So it's going to be me and a bunch of girls, and even my two dogs are girls. So
you, sir, are in deep trouble.
I am. So I got to find ways to inject testosterone in throughout the house or something. But it's like, I'm already starting to feel it kind of, you know, it's like things are going to change around here really quick.
I think you are exactly
right. One of the biggest changes is that my food in the refrigerator will last a little bit longer.
Well, with Morgan absent, that's true. Unless he decides to show up conveniently around supper time.
I could totally see that because they won't have washer and dryer, so I know he's going to be coming over to still do laundry. So, yeah.
Could be worse. He could just drop it off.
No, that's not going to fly. Yeah, he's been doing his own laundry for a while, and that's going to continue. So,
what's Morgan think when about every week we talk about Morgan on the show? Does he say, Dad, can you knock that off?
That would be assuming he actually listens. So,
well, somebody probably told him along the way.
Yeah, I don't. I'm just going to wait for him to listen one of these days so he knows.
All right. We love you, Morgan.
Yes, we do. We got a very special guest, a friend of mine on the line, Jane Robbins, senior fellow with American Principles Project. Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, Jane.
Thank you, Shane. Good to be here.
Great. So your governor down in Georgia has kind of lost his mind, hasn't he?
Uh-huh. Yeah. he vetoed a modest religious liberty bill last week because he did not want to anger the mega corporations and the LGBT community. So he decided that that was more important than taking care of people of faith in Georgia.
So when you called this this bill modest, what do you mean by that?
Well, it was a restatement of the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which he had always said that he would sign, mm-hmm. because he voted for it when he was in Congress. But it also had a few provisions that would protect people in connection with dealing with ceremonies, marriages that they feel violate their religious beliefs. So, for example, you couldn't, there were organizations, if there are organizations that are providing charitable services or whatever, they wouldn't have to participate in something that they didn't want to participate in. So he said that was discriminatory because it would be discriminatory not to force people to participate in same-sex marriages. So therefore, he vetoed it.
It's amazing because one of the things I try to, when I talk about religious conscience bills, for people to draw a distinction between discriminating against a group of people versus protecting one's conscience. For instance, you know, like a florist. You know, they may have homosexual clients that they serve all the time, but they just don't want to participate in a same-sex wedding, right?
That was the case with the Kleins.
That was the case with the Kleins, except they were, you know, bakers in Oregon. Wanted to, you know, they had already had clients or, you know, that were homosexuals that were happy. They had, you know, did good business, and they just didn't want to participate in a wedding. And it's just amazing how the climate has changed. That now it's like, you know, we're forced. If you're a Christian business owner, you're forced to participate in events that, you know, totally violate your religious conscience.
Well, and interestingly, our bill in Georgia got modified so that it didn't clearly protect those little businesses. It was mainly, for example, churches and Christian schools and organizations that were definitely faith-based organizations. Now, there was one provision in the bill that might protect some businesses in connection with weddings. And it would also have protected pastors from being sued if they refused to participate to marry two people of the same sex, and that was too much for the governor.
That's been backed up by the Supreme Court, right?
Well, yes, it has. But the power of the lobby on the other side of this is extraordinary, and it is so out of proportion to the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
We've never seen anything like this before, where people who are really so representative of so few people in Georgia are really dictating the entire debate.
Yeah,
and,
Jane, real quick.
We don't have a governor that would do it.
Jane, real quickly, with respect to what you just mentioned, I just want to be clear here in my own thinking or my own understanding of what just happened. Are you saying that in your state now, because this legislation has been vetoed, that anybody could walk up to a particular church, evangelical church, who does not believe that homosexuality is condoned in Scripture, anybody could walk in there and demand that they use the building, that they rent the building, or demand that the minister of that church marry them? Is that where the law leaves you?
Well, I don't know if that's going to happen. It might and it might not. Pastors have a good argument under the First Amendment that they don't have to do it anyway. But when it comes to the church building, that's another problem. And we haven't seen it happen yet, although we know it will, because people mm-hmm. target churches and these organizations. So the thing that the bill would have done would have been to make sure that that can't happen, that they would not be dragged into court over that, they would not be sued for it. But now the bill has been vetoed, so we don't know. It might very well be that church or whatever religious organization would win in court, but we don't know because the protection of the bill isn't there.
You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Jane Robbins with American Principles Project. Jane, now kind of shifting gears here, we have the tale of two different governors. We have Pat McCrory of North Carolina, who signed a bill that basically, if I understand it correctly, dissolved the city of Charlotte's ordinance that allowed transgendered to use whatever bathroom they wanted. I'm probably simplifying that, but and we're kind of seeing a similar thing where businesses are you know, jumping in, threatening to boycott. You have New York saying we're not going to allow state government travel down to North Carolina. You know, so what is with this trend, do you think, with businesses? I mean, who are some of these players that you've seen, you know, that are kind of spearheading this effort?
Now, some of these are huge corporations.
Right.
Yes, in Georgia, the primary spearheaders of this are the corporations such as Coca-Cola, Delta Airlines, UPS, Home Depot. And because those are the only companies that the Georgia Chamber of Commerce really cares about, they don't care about the mom-and-pop businesses, they care about the big guys, they are also very much in favor of what those corporations want. In North Carolina, I think it's some of the same people, and PayPal, of course, has gotten a lot of attention because PayPal has decided not to locate a facility there, even though they happily make millions of dollars in countries that throw gay people off the tops of buildings. So the hypocrisy is just, you know, so thick that you can can't fight your way through it.
Right. Yeah, it's like start boycotting some of these Middle Eastern countries, then come back and talk to us about...
Exactly. And Disney, for example. Disney was very vocal about the Georgia law because Disney has movie... obviously, they make movies, and there are a lot of movies that get made in Georgia because Georgia has all these tax breaks. The idea that these Hollywood film companies are not going to come into Georgia and make movies is just laughable because they save millions of dollars, and the only thing they care about is money. So they're still going to come and they'll huff and they'll still come and make the movies. Right. But the interesting thing about Disney is that Disney, I think you know that they have some sort of theme park in Florida.
Yeah.
Florida has a religious freedom statute. And so I presume they will be shutting down Disney World. I haven't heard the announcement.
We're going to expect that, yeah.
Jane, when was that enacted? That's interesting.
I think that's been one of the first states.
It's been a long time. Yeah. It's been, so there are 30-something states. 20-something have the actual statute. 30-something have it through when you add in the judicial determinations as well. But, yes, the majority of states have this kind of thing. And it not going quite as far as Georgia's went, certainly not anywhere near as far as Mississippi's went.
Right.
But have a religious freedom statute. But so Disney is complaining that, you know, and Disney also currently is partnering with the government of communist China, which forces women to abort their babies. But Disney draws the line at respecting Christians in Georgia. They'll do anything in the Middle East or anything in China, but don't ask us to respect Christians.
Oh, man. Well, and also the NFL, didn't they jump in, say, threaten the Super Bowl?
Yes. They did.
Yes, and see, our governor has, there are two things that he wants more out of life than anything in the world. One is to get the Super Bowl in Atlanta.
Oh.
The second thing is to get the Final Four.
Hmm.
And so you threaten him with one of those, and he will cower in the corner.
You're messing with his bucket list, evidently, huh?
Exactly. And the last time we had the Super Bowl in Atlanta, I only remember two things about it. One was we had a terrible ice storm and all the traffic was messed up. And the second thing was that Ray Lewis got charged with murder for after the game. And I don't have good memories of the Super Bowl, and exactly nobody in Georgia cares about whether we had the Super Bowl. If you're not in the Atlanta hotel or restaurant industry, you could not care less.
Right.
But the governor is terrified that if you mention any possibility that somebody is not going to spend a dollar here that they might otherwise have spent, then he'll fold like a cheap umbrella.
Mm.
Jane, what's it going to take for people, whether it's in Georgia or any other state for the matter of that, to say enough is enough? We're not going to do this anymore. We are not going to have people's religious liberties just slammed in this respect. We are going to put forth some legislation, and we're going to pass it, and people's rights are going to be protected. Or is it a lost cause?
I don't think it's a lost cause. I think that people are going to wake up. I think that the North Carolina kind of situation is really an overreach. When you start telling people, you can tell liberal parents who are all fine with gay marriage that a grown man is going to be in their little girl's restroom, and they get nervous about that. So
right.
I think that may be the beginning of people waking up and coming to their senses on this.
Yeah.
But another thing that we need to have is we need to have an awakening of the churches. We need to have ministers by the thousands preaching from the pulpits, out leading rallies. And we've had some of that in Georgia. We haven't had enough. But the ministers can no longer assume that if they just keep quiet and keep their heads down, everything will be fine.
Right.
It won't be fine. And so they have got to, I encourage them to read the story of Bonhoeffer in the 1930s and see what happens when you decide that you're just not going to take a stand, because after all, you don't want, you know, your largest contributor in your congregation to leave because he gets mad.
Right.
You know, at some point, you got to plant the flag, and I think we're at flag planting point now.
And one of the reasons we even, you know, we're in Iowa and we wanted to talk about this because Iowa doesn't actually have a Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and we'd like to have one here. So what we're seeing happening in Georgia will probably happen here in Iowa should we make that push, and we need to be ready for it as big businesses, for whatever reason, seem to think that, you know, business friendly means we just, you know, cave on our values, which is mind boggling to me. But Jane, thank you so much for coming on. That was Jane Robbins with American Principles Project. You are listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Thanks, Jane.
With Shane Vanner and Brian Myers. We'll be back in a moment. Thank you, Jane.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
So, in studio with us, we have a very special guest, a good friend of mine, Eric Goranson, who is with the Iowa Association of Christian Schools, as well as, are you still chair of the Iowa Advocates for Choice in Education?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I don't want to.
Are there any other hats you that, you wear that we should know about?
I'm also chair of the Educational Opportunities PAC.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, which is probably a lesser known PAC, but you guys, you fund candidates and endorse candidates that are supportive of school choice.
Correct.
Okay. Well, there is education savings account bill, a school choice bill that's still alive in the Iowa House. My first question is, how is it so still alive this late in the session after funnel?
The last number of years, we've had multiple ESA bills. We've had a statewide universal ESA bill that's been introduced and considered in both chambers for a number of years, considered to some level or another. It hasn't always gone as far as we'd like it to go, but that's been sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
There are artificial deadlines that the legislature gives itself to make sure that a lot of the policy bills get taken care of at a certain point in the session, and then they can focus on the budget, you know,
right.
At the end.
Yeah.
This bill was, because there is an expenditure is in the Appropriations Committee,
which
is funnel-proof, which means it can be considered at any time.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, this explain real quick what education savings accounts are, and then what this particular bill will do, because it is scaled back considerably.
Yeah, it's important to understand what an education savings account really is, because it is different than a voucher in a couple of ways. So you'll hear that in a lot of talking points on the other side of the issue, that this is a voucher. And technically, that's not the case. Basically, funds are distributed into a secure, fraud-protected account that families can use at any accredited non-public school or for educational therapy, special needs. Ultimately, when we get education savings accounts to where we want them, you'd be able to shop from any number of educational vehicles. And then each family makes their own decision about where to enroll their child and whether it's a school affiliated with a religion or a non-sectarian school or another educational option. So it's different because a state isn't actually writing a check to an educational provider. They're giving the money to the parent and empowering the parent to make that decision for their child. Mm-hmm. You get a debit card, a lot like food stamps or health savings accounts. The difference being that instead of you putting the money into this, like an HSA for a health savings account, the state's putting a portion of the average state aid per pupil, the money that the state would put into each child's education, into this account. That doesn't include property taxes, sales taxes, mm-hmm. any other state funds that are not tied to attendance.
So basically also, you could actually go out and purchase curriculum and textbooks too, right, in homeschool?
Yeah, under the pilot program that's being considered now, that is not the case. The current private school students, as well as the homeschool students that are currently homeschooling and would move to homeschooling, are not included. However, it's just a pilot program. The point of the pilot program is to prove that the system works, to prove that the sky won't fall, and to work out bugs in the program so that when it does go statewide, it's as seamless as possible. Okay. Our statewide universal bill includes homeschooling, virtual schooling, private schooling, and educational therapies. So really, you can customize your child's education any way you'd like.
So, right. In many respects, it would be like an HSA for education.
Yeah, I mean, yes. Generally, with an HSA, your employer puts in some and you put in some.
Mm-hmm.
It's structured the same way in how you use it and how you pay, a little different on where the money comes from and how it goes in. There's already Coverdell and ESA type accounts for the federal, you know, for post-secondary and things like that. This isn't like that where you put the money in.
Right. So with House Bill 2284, that's the number for it, the two pilot programs will take place in Sioux Center and Waterloo, correct?
Correct.
How did they determine those two, you know, communities?
You know, that was a combination of the private school community knowing that those private school areas had a good mix of Catholic, Christian, evangelical, and other types of schools, and that those schools had capacity to bring in those kids that might come over.
Okay.
It's a set number of spots. It's 190 slots between the two of them for the pilot. And we wanted an urban and a rural example so that we could prove that it works in both rural and urban environments. Those districts could change moving forward. There's no magic, you know, about those two districts other than that those schools were prepared, had the demographics we wanted. And it wasn't a unilateral decision either. It was, it's a collaboration between legislators and activists and the school choice community.
So, and these are going to be students that currently qualify for free and reduced lunches, correct? That
correct.
Can make that switch?
Correct. That's another thing about the pilot program that'll be different from the general rollout is that this is means tested. The general rollout bill that we have and that we'd like to move this toward is universal. It doesn't matter how much you make or where you live.
Yeah, and that's important to note. And I think, you know, having a pilot program like this as well, I mean, people are always talking about screaming, data, show us data. How is this working? And this will actually provide some examples of how well it's working or not so well.
Yeah, at least for the low-income, you know, segment. You know, it's the means testing isn't something we were pursuing on the pilot program even, but it's something that – you know, legislators and others wanted to put in there, and we're willing to roll with that. But in reality, the whole point of education savings accounts is we have a means-tested tax credit scholarship program in Iowa for those in the lower income brackets. But that just the very nature of tax credits, you're never going to be able to reach everyone who needs it.
Right.
Education savings accounts goes a long way towards reducing that income inequality and making sure that even after an ESA, some of our tuition will be high enough, even though it's lower than the public school tuition, if you were to pay it,
It's high enough that the STO will be able to supplement the lowest income families even when the ESA isn't enough, especially with children or families with multiple children.
And this is like, the amount is 5,600?
Yeah, it's the average state aid per pupil, which is not complicated, but sometimes it's misunderstood. You know, every district gets a different amount of state aid based on their property tax revenues and other revenues and demographics. And so we would take the average of all the districts just to make it simple and clean, and that would be the amount. And right now that's hovering around $5,600 per child.
What kinds of tweaks do you hope for or anticipate after you get through the pilot program?
Well, really, or, I mean,
do you have a wish list?
Yeah. I want the Senate version of the bill to be where it moves towards. And the Senate version, and frankly, Representative Jake Heifel and others have sponsored a House version of the same bill. It's not means tested. It's statewide, and it's open to anyone who wants it. And I really, my vision for this, you know, assuming we get this pilot program passed in the near future, is we pass it. A year or two goes down the road, we see that it's working, and we just ramp it up to exactly what we've been pushing for all along.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen Nevada recently passed universal school choice, except theirs was you had to at least it was for current public school students, unless you wanted to go back to public school for like a semester and then leave. Have you seen how well is that working well in Nevada?
They're tied up in court right now. They have about. I think the latest number I heard was they had about 4% of Nevada's public school students and overall student population. I can't remember if it was just public students or overall population sign up for the ESA. And then right as they were going through that sign-up process, I think which is what they anticipated, frankly, was going to sign up, they got sued by the public school establishment and the unions. I'm not sure who the plaintiffs are in that case, but we're waiting for that outcome. Just you bring up the idea of public versus non-public students, and what do you have to do to qualify? Our goal ultimately is that you don't have to jump through hoops to get into the program. Nevada's program, when it's hopefully they win in court and get this thing rolling, it is a wonderful, amazing program that's going to be the standard, I think, for ESAs moving forward. But we'd like to see how that goes and frankly learn from them and hopefully make this where at any time, whether you're a 4-year-old, 5-year-old, or whether you're in public school now, you just jump in when you need to.
You're listening to Caffeinate Thoughts Radio, and in studio we have Eric Gorenson with the Iowa Association of Christian Schools and Iowa Advocates for Choice in Education, Educational Opportunities PAC, and probably a few other things that are totally irrelevant to our discussion today. But
all-around brilliant guy.
Obviously, yes, probably definitely the smartest man in the room today.
Getting deep in here, folks.
Yeah, so... there's obviously going to be resistance to programs like this. For instance, I just saw a Facebook post from Kinsey Elementary School in Sioux Center, and they're bringing up things like, you know, they're concerned about losing per pupil funding. They also said, hey, and these private schools could end up facing the same rules as public schools, you know, the strings attached argument. Are those things that we need to be concerned about?
Nope. As a matter of fact, we...
in a word, no.
No, I don't know. Sometimes I just don't know how to answer critics of programs like this because, you know, I thank you, Kinsey Elementary School, for being concerned about strings attached for us. But in reality, the bill is written very clearly. Our admissions policies stay the same. In the pilot program, because it doesn't include CPI, you would have to be an accredited non-public school, but that could be independently accredited. It could be state accredited. We have a good system that works for all of our schools in Iowa that choose to go that route. It's just not an issue. The strings issue has come from a couple of examples in other states, and in my opinion, no disrespect to those programs, it comes from weak advocacy. If you have strings attached, it's because you have weak advocates, not because the idea is bad.
And like,
our bill does not have those issues. Yeah, Indiana, you know, the governor kind of took over the process there of getting that bill passed, and they have to jump through more hoops than we would be comfortable jumping through here. That being said, their program's working really well, but I don't see that happening in Iowa. The Catholic Conference and the Christian schools and Iowa ACE all have a good relationship, Iowa ACE being the Alliance for Choice in Education. And my understanding is that we're all pretty much on the same page. If a bill gets strings attached to it, we cease to support it, and we want that bill dead.
Now, here's an argument I hear a lot. Don't you – you just hate public schools, don't you? You just want to see them end, don't you?
You know, that argument is so tired, and here's why. There are so many school choice programs across the country, some that are huge and very wide open. Indiana is a good example. Florida has a number of school choice programs. Arizona was the first one with an education savings account. Nevada had an enrollment period here where we were seeing what kind of response they were going to get to their ESA program. The sky has never fallen, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Public schools are fine. Public school budgets don't tend to go down, whether you like it or not. There's only so many parents who are going to choose an education outside of the public system.
Right.
There's only so many parents who are going to choose a homeschooling situation or a religious schooling situation. For the time being, the vast majority of private schools are religiously affiliated. That'll change a little bit over time. But we just don't – it's just never happened. The concerns that the opponents of school choice always bring up have never materialized anywhere that those programs have been implemented.
Their arguments presuppose there's going to be this mass exodus of people from the public system or money.
Yeah, and dear public school administrator, have more confidence in yourself. You know, if you're worried about a mass exodus of students, then I think that begs the question, why are you worried about a mass exodus? You know, we have good public schools in Iowa. Iowa's public schools are better than average. And we, you know, I don't believe that they have reason to worry about that, because it hasn't happened in other states with public schools with far more problems than ours have.
Yeah, this elementary school is, you know, they mentioned, if 70 people leaving, that's going to be a reduction of $400,000 of funding.
I want to be really clear, too, that their other argument you brought up was that they would lose per pupil funding. In the long term, that may be the case for the small percentage of students that choose to come over to private schools, but there's two areas that they're not mentioning. One is property tax dollars, mm-hmm. sales tax dollars, and categorical funding that's not tied to attendance still stay with that school. So their per pupil funding will go up. So small amount of students leave, per pupil expenditures go up, and the pilot program as written holds them harmless and pays for them to have those children that they no longer educate for the duration of the pilot program.
Oh, that's important to note. Yeah. Yeah.
Just a minute left here, Eric. Can you tell us, prognosticate for us what you think the future of this bill is?
You know, the Iowa legislature is not much different than the presidential race this year. It's not worth speculating or prognosticating on what's going to happen next.
Because you just shut me down.
Because you never know. But I will tell you this. We have a school choice majority in both chambers, in the sense that both chambers, Senate and House, have a majority of members that want to be there for non-public schools. And we're going to keep working on it till it passes, whether it takes another week or another 10 years. We're going to get this done, or something like it done.
So contact your representative and right now your representative and tell them to support House File 2284, the Education Savings Account. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Thanks, Eric, for coming on.
Thanks, Eric.
We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give them a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org.
We are now into our news segment, otherwise known as News You Can Use. First up, we've got Representative Peter King of New York,
mm-hmm.
who says New Yorkers are voting for Cruz or that are voting for Cruz should have their head examined. Okay, this is according...
So a very impartial opinion here.
It's according from, according to BuzzFeed. Here's a quote. "Let me say something about the New York primary. Any New Yorker who even thinks of voting for Ted Cruz should have their head examined," King said on Joe Piscopo's show on AM 970. "Really, here's a guy who refused to sign on to the 9/11 Health Care Act for the cops and the firemen. Here's a guy who talks about New York values. New York keeps going forward," King continued, citing the city's response to 9/11. "We're tough. And to have some guy like Ted Cruz with cowboy boots walk around criticizing us, look, I hope he gets the cold shoulder. And other things from every New Yorker. Send him back where he belongs. He's a phony. And that was all off the record, by the way. I don't want anyone listening. That was all off the record. I just can't stand that guy," he added.
Obviously, it didn't stay off the record.
Do you think Peter King doesn't like Ted Cruz?
Yeah, well, the last quote in here, to me, the best debate is between Kasich and Trump. Okay, anyway. Not between Cruz.
You can't throw up on air, bud.
Not between Cruz with that smooth talking, how he loves everyone, is going to wear the armor of God as he's into battle and all that. Come on, give me a break. Like, what a buffoon. He's just... Congressman Peter King, I mean, it's not he's pretty known of, he has very strong opinions and willing to share with anyone who's willing to listen, mm-hmm. and why people give him the time of day compared to, he's one of 28 congressmen in New York, but he seems to get more press attention than anybody.
Well, he's louder than a lot of
them. Definitely. He's just an angry little man.
Next up from Breitbart. That was good. Breitbart.
Trump Bart.
Breitbart, okay. Trump Bart, I mean Breitbart, admits Trump will fall short on delegates. Senator Ted Cruz's overwhelming victory in Wisconsin on Tuesday makes it all but impossible for GOP front runner Donald Trump to win the 1,237 delegates he needs to secure the nomination ahead of the RNC convention in Cleveland. Trump currently leads the GOP field. With 743 delegates, he would need to win 58.9% of the remaining pledged delegates to obtain the simple majority necessary. A number of the states remaining award delegates proportionately. The bulk of delegates in one critical upcoming state, that would be Pennsylvania, aren't officially bound to any candidate. The fight for California's massive 172 delegates will be fought largely in each of the state's 54 congressional districts.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, Breitbart News estimates that Donald Trump will end the primary portion of the nomination fight with 1,164 delegates, 74 short of the 1,237 necessary to win the nomination on the first ballot.
First of all, I think it's pretty huge that Trump Bart is admitting.
Huge.
Admitting this. I think they're off on their delegate count. I think it's going to be a little bit more of a gap than 74 delegates. And he brings up one point. They bring up a good point here. Pennsylvania delegates aren't bound to any candidate, but this is another argument that John Kasich is making. I can win Pennsylvania. First of all, he's not even remotely close in polling in Pennsylvania. Doesn't mean he's going to get the delegates because frankly, Cruz is showing that he's got the organization and he's playing the delegate game. He's been able to snatch up these unbound delegates. So.
John Kasich is playing a game that no one understands.
Right. I mean, even establishment. He's beclowning himself. He needs to drop out.
Beclowning himself.
Yes.
We got to remember that one, Chris. Beclowning.
Beclowning.
By the way, Chris is running the board today instead of Ron. Chris is being awfully quiet.
Yeah.
Is your mic hot?
No.
No. Okay.
Next up, we got Bernie Sanders saying Hillary Clinton is not qualified.
I agree.
You know, that's the first thing that he said in a long time I could really get behind.
Of course, we probably disagree on the reasons.
This is true. This is from a campaign press release from the Sanders campaign. "I don't believe that she is qualified if she is, through her super PAC, taking tens of millions of dollars in special interest funds. I don't think that you are qualified if you get $15 million from Wall Street through your super PAC. I don't think you're qualified if you voted for the disastrous war in Iraq. I don't think you're qualified if you supported almost every disastrous trade agreement. I don't think you're qualified if you supported the Panama Free Trade Agreement, something I very strongly opposed, which has given the green light to wealthy people and corporations all over the world to avoid paying taxes owed to their countries.
So let me boil
Take
this
that,
down.
Hillary.
Sanders is saying basically, I don't think anyone's qualified to be president if they believe in capitalism.
That is kind of how it boils down.
Right. So, okay. Well, it's good to know. And frankly, pretty expected from a socialist candidate. So,
okay. Next up, we've got Facebook wanting you to share more about yourself.
Facebook. That sounds kind of creepy.
A lot of things on Facebook are creepy. Okay. You remember when they first came out with that facial recognition program? That
yes.
was creepy when that first happened.
It's like, I don't want to tag myself in photos.
Facebook Inc. is working to combat a decline in people sharing original personal content, the fuel that helps power the money machine at the heart of its social network, according to the people familiar with the matter.
Yeah, and this is from Bloomberg.com.
Sorry about that.
Yep.
Overall, sharing has remained strong, according to Facebook. However, people have been less willing to post updates about their lives as their list of friends grow. Instead, Facebook's 1.6 billion users are posting more news and information from other websites.
Mm-hmm.
As Facebook ages, users may have more than a decade's worth of acquaintances added as friends. People may not always feel comfortable checking into a local bar or sharing an anecdote from their lives, knowing these updates may not be relevant to all the people that are connected to them.
Mm-hmm.
According to one of the people familiar with the situation, Facebook employees working on the problem have a term for this decline: context collapse. You like that?
That's nice.
Context collapse. Personal sharing has shifted to smaller audiences on Snapchat, Facebook's Instagram, and other messaging services.
Actually, and there's a way to you can have public posts. You can actually tailor posts to particular lists. If people, you know, but not everybody wants to take the time to put their friends into different lists. But there's actually ways around that where there's certain things. I know my profile's mostly public, so I don't really share a lot of personal stuff on mine.
I've
always been that way.
Don't you think part of the problem is there's a lot of users now that may not be as up to speed as other folks with respect to what you can do?
Oh, no
on
doubt.
Facebook
no
and
doubt.
Not do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been kind of taken over by older folks, too, which is why younger people, and really, I think that's the biggest reason why you're seeing this shift, because older people don't tend to want to share that stuff anyway,
yep.
And younger people are going off to Twitter and Instagram.
Yep, they have left the building in mm-hmm. many respects.
Right.
Last but not least, the government will owe more money than the entire economy produces.
That's
Feature
encouraging.
That! This is from the Washington Free Beacon. An auditor for the Government Accountability Office told lawmakers Wednesday that in the next few years, the federal government will owe more than our entire economy produces.
That's encouraging. Not.
It's also a complete non-surprise.
Right. Right. And so far, nobody seems to be serious about doing anything about it. That's why this election is vitally important, but, you know, got to be willing to make those hard decisions.
You do.
This is Caffeinate Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
I'm sorry if what I said offended you, but you made me mad. Can we just forget this and move on? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Apologies are critical to conflict. They can either open the gate to a path of forgiveness or slam you into the ditch of bitterness. An apology like the one in our opener can cause damage because it does not request a change of relationship, but rather places the blame on the recipient and sidesteps the issue. There is no indication that the person really sees his own contribution to the problem, and no hope is given for change. A true apology communicates understanding, remorse, and a commitment to change. An excellent guideline is Peacemaker Ministries' 7 A's of an Apology. You can find the 7A's at our website, crosswalkcounseling.org. Or to get coaching for your big apology, call us at 515-635-5465. That's 515-635-5465.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We're hitting the home stretch. Last segment. Hey, have you checked out CaffeinatedThoughts.com? Because you know we write, too. We don't just do this wonderful radio program. We have daily updates. Be sure to bookmark that in your browser. Subscribe to our emails. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. We would really appreciate you keeping in touch with us.
And now we've come to my favorite part of the show. We are about to share a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet, you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up.
All right, this one's from the Huffington Post.
Occasionally, the Huffington Post has some good things.
They really do. The internet is falling all over itself to make fun of Columbia University students protesting. Did I say protesting?
Mm-hmm.
Protesting the impending installation of a hideous sculpture by semi-abstract artist Henry Moore. A group of students and alumni wrote a March 30th op-ed in opposition to Moore's, quote, a reclining figure. That's apparently the title of the artwork, which is supposed to be installed on the lawn in front of the school's main library at some unspecified date. This comes from a campus newspaper, the Columbia Spectator. And this is from their criticism. Moore's reclining figure, quote, is meant to suggest the form of a woman with her legs outstretched before her, propping herself up with her forearm, unquote. It also, we submit, suggests a dying mantis or a poorly formed pterodactyl. The sculpture is so repulsive that when thieves stole Moore's original cast, which was valued at £3 million, they literally chopped it up and sold it for scrap. £3 million for a sculpture, and they chopped it up and sold it for scrap. There's also a 1,200-person-strong petition against the sculpture, and a sit-in was scheduled for March 31st. Though the Facebook event had about 207 people saying they were going, photos from the sit-in made it look like about 4 people showed up.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Okay. I could just imagine Columbia University students running for their safe space as this sculpture is unveiled.
That's right.
It offends me! Can you, I'm not, obviously, I don't appreciate ugly art. Some of the sculptures at the sculpture park downtown Des Moines, I look at, I'm going, because I know 5-year-olds that could probably come up with a better concept than some of the stuff.
This had to really, really be bad that the students were saying it was hideous.
Yeah.
The students were saying... You know, what was this business about a dying mantis or a poorly formed pterodactyl?
I'm going to get a picture of this statue. I'm going to put it up on our Facebook page so you could take a look at it because, yeah, it is something to behold. I'm not a fan of abstract art anyway because I think most of it's just garbage.
Isn't this classic? $3 million for this thing.
Right. It's just amazing. Who determines this? Why? You know, who places the value on stuff like this? I mean, just some of the stuff that they consider art anymore is absolutely ridiculous.
What was that one we had a few months ago where this thing was worth $1 million? Remember that? It was on
vaguely.
Yeah, same kind of thing.
Vaguely.
Completely absurd.
You know what? I'm going to vomit on this canvas and call it Vomit on Canvas, and this will be art.
And
I'm going to sell it for $100,000.
And you will be a worldwide celebrity.
Yes. You can go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art and witness my vomit on canvas. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Shane's barf period.
Right. Anyway,
I'm a budding artist. What can I say?
Or a barfing artist.
Yeah. Hey, send us your story ideas. Story@caffeinatethoughts.com. This is Caffeinate Thoughts Radio. We'll see you next week.
Take care, everybody.